that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Are you ready for the most informative, well-thought-out hockey podcast on the internet? You are? Sorry. It's just Crown Conversations with your hosts, Robin P. and James Nicholson.
Hello, and welcome to a very sad, strange, twisted edition of Crown Conversations. Only sad, strange, and twisted because that's how Sarah and I are. James is too busy, so he is unfortunately not joining us tonight. It's just me and Sarah recording this just about 2 hours before puck drop against the red, red, red hot Florida Panthers. Oh God, they're gonna die.
Yeah, that's the nicest way to put it, I think.
Okay, for those of you who do not know, the news came out, Matt Roy is also out of tonight's game. So for those of you keeping score at home, the Kings are down literally five of their six starting defensemen. Edler, Doughty, Roy, Walker, and who am I forgetting?
Mikey Anderson.
And Mikey Anderson. All hurt, all within, well, okay, Edler and Walker have been out most of the season, but, you know, the last three, all within the last week, so, and the Florida Panthers are a very good hockey team, and their hopes are riding on a pair of rookies in Jordan Spence and Jacob, what, the Swedish Moverar guy, and Christian Wallanen and Austin Strand, and Tobias Bjornfoot, and Olli Maatta.
It's so dire. Like,
oh my God.
You know, it's like you always want the kids to get their chance. Like, I've loved Jordan Spence all season with the rain, but like, this isn't how I wanted him to get to make his NHL debut is under these circumstances. And yeah, I have thought for a long time that Austin Strand deserved a call up and should be playing on this team, but this isn't how I wanted him back either. Like, literally every game someone has gotten hurt over the past, what, like 4 or 5 games at least? Like, this stinks.
Oh, yeah, and Dustin Brown got hurt in the Sharks game. Oh, we're not going to talk about that game, but he got hurt in the last game against the Sharks, took a puck high up off the arm or something. Not that Dustin Brown was doing a whole lot for the Kings. God knows I love Dustin Brown. I'm a huge Dustin Brown apologist, but he has been not good this year for the Kings.
Yeah.
But like, who, I don't know, Sarah, I think they're going to get crushed.
Yeah. I don't have high hopes for this one. You know, we're also missing Andreas Athanasiou, who like, The flashes that we've seen of him from him when he's been healthy have been great, but he has gotten hurt like every other day. Victor Arvidsson, I think Tom McClellan said that he's skating again, but he's not ready to come back yet. Brendan Lemieux, whatever, he is also hurt. It's just like, of all of the stretches for this to happen, of course it has to happen when they're playing. What, like Florida, Colorado, I think Vegas is coming up this week.
Mm-hmm.
This couldn't have happened when we were playing a bunch of like Buffalo and Ottawa and teams where like it just doesn't matter. This week's schedule, it's the Panthers, the Avalanche, the Sharks, the Golden Knights, the Predators. That's the next 5 games.
Yeah.
The game against Vegas especially, that's on the 19th, is going to be huge because we're still ahead of them in the standings.
Barely.
Although I think as we're recording this, Vegas is losing to the Blue Jackets, so thank you, Blue Jackets. But, like, this just, I'm glad that the Kings have had enough hot runs recently that, like, even if they stink for the next week or two, that they still will be sort of in the playoff hunt. But I hate all of this.
This stretch of injuries, this rash of injuries, honestly, probably could not have come at a worse time. I mean, the good news, though, is that they also have Chicago and Seattle coming up to round out their home schedule over the next 2 weeks. So, God knows I love Seattle, but Seattle's awful.
Yeah, their team, not good.
My fear, though, is that they're somehow going to find ways to lose to both Chicago and Seattle. Like, they should have picked up 4 points against the Sharks. And
right.
And every time, I don't know what it is about the Sharks. The Sharks always, they're like the Kings' Achilles heel. Like, the Kings can get up against anybody, but somehow, against the Sharks, they're always like, oh, I don't wanna.
And, like, you know, the past however many seasons, we've always been like, oh, it's just the Martin Jones factor. Like, Martin Jones is going to crush it against his old team. Fine. Like, that's just the way hockey works. There is no more Martin Jones on the Sharks. Now it's just the Sharks, the Kings doing this against the Sharks to make us miserable.
What's interesting is that both teams have had so much turnover in the last couple mm-hmm. of years that there's basically no more rivalry. And yet somehow the Sharks still act like the three guys who are left on the Sharks from 2014, they're the ones who are like propelling this rivalry still going. And the three guys who are left on the Kings, they're like, whatever, man.
Right. Like, please leave us alone. I mean, I feel like it's the same with like the Ducks kind of there's very few guys left on either side who were around for sort of the heyday of both teams. Now it's just like a bunch of dudes, but you know, even during like the rookie games where they have no reason to really hate each other, they super hate each other. But yeah, the Sharks, man, why?
Well, every team has to have an Achilles heel, and hey, at least you know it's not Buffalo, like it has. Oh God, poor Jack Campbell. He's been so bad lately. I don't know what happened, but after Christmas, he's just gone down the toilet, and oh my,
and he's hurt now, so like, great.
Well, at least we're not the Leafs, where, you know, we have high expectations. We have moderate expectations, and I think our expectations got too high, and so the universe, the hockey universe, is like, whoa, readjust those expectations, people.
Right.
This was a bubble team.
But I mean, I will say, like, that is kind of the good thing about everyone having, like, you know, people have been so divided. Like, there have been a bunch of, you know, Kings people who, like, you know, my take on the team coming into this season was like, yeah, this team could make the playoffs, but I thought they'd be like bubble team, wild card team at best. So like, this is just a pleasant surprise, you know, injuries outside of this whole injury nonsense. But like, it really feels like any success or competence this season beyond just like don't get embarrassed every night is just a bonus. Since no, like, you know, no one expected this team to really be in this position, let alone like not, you know, right now not having to be like afraid of, you know, falling out of the playoffs. I mean, they need to be, but like, I don't know. My point is that like, this is so much beyond the expectations most people had that it's like, well, we're just going to enjoy the ride. But also, like, the ride stinks now, and it's not enjoyable.
It's unfortunate, too, because we had really high hopes for Cal Peterson coming in. Mm-hmm. And he started off okay, and the Kings were doing this stupid thing where it's like, hey, let's play each goalie one night and see who's better. And then they were even, and then Cal Peterson was bad for one game, and the Kings were like, see? He's not good enough. And so then they put all their weight of expectations on Jonathan Quick, who was inexplicably really good to start the season. And then, of course, everything after Christmas just kind of stank in goal, yeah. And now our goalies both stink. Oh, but I'm sad because I love Cal Peterson so much.
Yeah, and it feels like, I mean, from talking You know, I've talked with Locked On Kings. I've talked with some other people who are like much closer to understanding what goalies do than I am. And, you know, from their perspective, it feels very much like, you know, being a goalie is such a like mental sport more so than any other position. And, you know, there probably is some of that, you know, mental struggle that has gotten into Cal Peterson of, you know, everyone knows that he's supposed to be the heir apparent to the net. And, you know, this was supposed to be his year and he just signed a big deal. And so like now it's just all gotten in his head, which, you know, terrible timing. And so good for Jonathan Quick to like be decent again for the beginning part of the season. But like, I feel like Cal Peterson will turn it around, but I need him to turn it around quicker, especially now that everyone on the team is dead.
Just so long as we don't need to recall Garrett Sparks again. Like,
he is hurt, so it doesn't even matter.
Oh.
He hasn't played in like months.
There's so many injuries to goalies this year. I literally cannot keep up. I was talking to someone about the Habs, and I was like, I forgot who I was asking about. I was asking about Jake Allen and Scott Matla from Locked On Canadians. He's like, Jake Allen's been hurt since January, and this was in mid-February. I'm like, God damn it.
Surprise. And I was talking to
somebody else the other day, and somebody else was like, no, the goalie's hurt. Okay, never mind. Get what I said.
Yeah, it's been weird. And I mean, yeah, Garrett Sparks being hurt really puts a lot more pressure. And he left a game like midway through once and has literally never been seen again. So I have no idea what happened. I don't remember anything like suspicious happening. I don't remember there being a hit to the head, like just literally no idea what's going on with him. And of course, like he hasn't even been seen around. You know, sometimes you see if you're at, you know, at games, especially minor league games, you'll see, you know, the scratchers or the injured guys just sort of roaming around. Like, he hasn't even been sighted. So I'm like, did he get abducted by aliens? I don't know. But, you know, that puts a lot more pressure, too, on Quick and Peterson to also not get hurt, because behind him, we've got Matt Villalta, who, you know, all respect due to Matt Villalta, but I don't think he's ready yet for the NHL. So, you know, you don't have goalie problems right up until the second you do have goalie problems.
Yeah. Well, just so long as they don't go through a similar rash of injury of their goalies like they did a few years ago. I forgot what year it is. I think it was like 2018 or something. Like, Jonathan Quick strained his groin and Jack Campbell strained his groin like two games later. And then Dusty Emu's son strained his groin. And then whoever else was the starter, I think it was Peter Budaj, was still with the team. Peter Budaj strained his groin. Like,
that season was rough.
Like, what the F is going on? And
yeah, like you have that many injuries happen all at once. Like, you know, what, like twice is a coincidence. More than that is, you know, something to be concerned about.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's just hope and pray that it's not Matt Villalta time.
Gosh, please. Sorry, Matt, but you're not ready.
Oh, I forgot to, you'll have to ask this when you do your Locked On podcast with, when you talk about the rain. I want to know what happened to Jacob Ingham. It seemed like at the beginning of the year, they were both, like, him and Villalta were doing really well. Maybe Villalta had the edge, but especially with Garrett Sparks injured, I wonder why they didn't call up Ingham. And I wonder if it's just the team going extra slow with Ingham.
Yeah, that's been something I've noticed lately with the goalies in the rain, too. You know, since it's been Villalta, they've kind of been rotating a little between Ingham, Parikh, and the third guy, John Lethemon. And Lethemon right now is up with the rain, which I found curious because usually it has been, what's his name? Ingham. And yeah, I think that's a good question to ask, Jared about whenever we talk, because I'm like, okay, is the team just trying to get, you know, Lethemon a little more experience too, a little more exposure, see what they have in all three goalies? Like what's the deal there? Because yeah, it is odd that, you know, you would have expected Jacob Ingham to be the next guy up, and he's still hanging out in Greenville, South Carolina with the Swamp Rabbits.
Yeah, because he's not on Ontario's roster. Mm-hmm. And then to start the year, they signed Garrett Sparks. And I thought, that's really interesting. I wonder what the plan is. And the plan was to send Ingham to the ECHL, which I guess makes sense so that way both guys can get starter time in net.
Yeah, and like that made sense. Like Sparks made sense because I think we've seen, like coming back to like the earlier point of like we've seen what happens when the Kings don't have goalie depth, and I think they realize like, ah crap, like if something happens to Quick and Peterson, like we're hosed. And so signing Sparks made sense, and he, you know, he got to play in that one game. He looked really good, whatever. You know, you need a number three who you know can play at the NHL level. So they got that. Of course, now Garrett Sparks is like missing. So see how well that worked out.
Maybe Peter Budaj can come out of retirement.
Maybe he's he actually works for the Colorado Eagles now. So we'd have to steal him, which would be fun.
It would be fun. I mean, Peter Budaj was such a good sport when he was in the AHL, and he was so good for Jack Campbell. Like, everybody just talked, everybody who played with Peter Budaj, they just absolutely raved about him, and they said what a good mentor he was. And I think that's kind of the other thing that they have with Garrett Sparks, is that they're like, at least if we have Garrett Sparks, then he has NHL experience. He can be a good mentor.
Yeah. Yeah. It's you need, I feel like teams don't realize how much they need that like number three veteran kind of guy until they don't have one. And then like, oh, well now none of our children know what they're doing.
Well, we could ask the Habs what that feels like.
Oh gosh.
They started out the year with two mediocre AHL goalies, and then they were down to Sam Monsonbleu, but I can't say his name. I don't speak French. Monsonbleu. No, I'm not going to try it again.
That guy.
Yeah, that guy. So they're down to him, and he has these spates where he does really well, and then he's really bad. But of course, that's kind of the Habs in a nutshell.
That's been their season.
Yes. But now they have Marty St. Louis to help them turn it all around.
They've looked decent since then. Like, congratulations. You're having fun again.
And you know, he said something interesting that I shared with James and Ryan. And he said, Marty St. Louis said, it was all about the reads. He doesn't want to take away the ability to make reads for his players. And I think that's something that's kind of missing with the Kings, because I felt like at the beginning of the year, it was Kopitar's line and it was Deneau's line. They were the guys who were able to make the reads both offensively and defensively. I mean, nobody reads a defensive play like Deneau. Jesus, that guy is everywhere, like in the best possible way. He is insane to watch, but like the third and fourth lines don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
It seems to me that they don't know what they're doing either. That was just my personal opinion.
Yeah, no, it the third and fourth lines, like, I mean, right now, especially like since the top line with Kopitar and Kempe and whoever else they decide to put up there, like that line unfortunately has kind of disappeared lately. And so unfortunately the Kings are right back to being a one line team essentially with Deneau and Moore and whoever they put on that wing, since Arvidsson's hurt too, like with them doing all the heavy lifting. Athanasiu was great until he got hurt again. you know, I think this is Jesse Cohen from All the Kings Men tweeted this, and I think he has a little bit of a point. Of his analogy was basically like, this isn't the time to like try to make the same recipe even though you're missing ingredients. It's time to try to make a whole new recipe. So it's like, okay, you know, you have like Deneau and Moore who work well together and whatever for that third spot. And now you have this mishmash of AHL guys and lines that are working but not really. Like, if there's any time for Todd McClellan to just say, like, okay, line blender, go, like, this is it, because you're running out of guys who even have chemistry together because they're all hurt. So instead of trying to replicate the same stuff we've seen from the Kings when they've been at their best and everyone's been healthy, like, let's change it up. Let's do something wacky, and maybe you'll hit on a success and we won't have to be so like, oh God, we've lost all of our games because everyone is dead.
I feel like he's tried that the last two games. He tried, he's tried that actually in the last three games, except for some reason that he keeps punishing Byfield. First, it was putting Dustin Brown on his wing, and then, and then it was just not letting him see the ice at all. Like, in, I went to the Sharks game on Monday. I don't know what day it is anymore. I went to the Sharks game with Ryan, and we were like, where's Byfield? I don't know if he touched the ice in the third period.
Yeah,
probably. We don't know if he was there or not. I saw him at the beginning of OT, and I was like, oh my God, they're going to put him out in OT. No, he was just stretching.
Just hanging. Yeah, no, the curious case of Quentin Byfield has been interesting. And it's like, Todd McClellan trusts him sort of, kind of, to a point, but not really. And yeah, like, Byfield hasn't exactly been given the biggest chance of success anyway with, like, with his line mates. It's kind of like, there's definitely some people who have been like, oh, Quentin Byfield, and for those people, I will come and fight you, because, like, chill out. But it's just like, be patient with him. Like, most players aren't phenomenal, like, when they're 19 years old. Yeah, he got four shifts in the third period of that game. Played about 2 minutes total. I can't really do math very well, but a little over 2 minutes. Which, you know, in a game that you need offense and you need something to happen, you know, maybe that's not the smartest choice to, like, sit him. He certainly had some good plays. He just hasn't been able to finish. It'll come together eventually, but it's really frustrating watching Todd McClellan not really seem to, like, know what to do with him. Like, at some point you just have to rip the band-aid off and say, okay, go. And yeah, if you make a mistake, you make a mistake, fine. Try to make up for it next time you're out on the ice. You just have to let him go. So it's been weird, especially seeing how, like, you know, obviously I did point out that after the Kings lost that game, the game that Jordan Spence debuted in, that the Kings have basically blown every debut this season for their young players that they've called up from the rain. So I was honestly didn't have high expectations for Jordan Spence's debut, because they've just screwed it up every time. But, you know, I feel like Todd McClellan had really good things to say about him, and, you know, respecting his performance in his first NHL game, didn't get the win, blah, blah, blah. But it, for whatever reason, it just seems like Quentin Byfield doesn't, like, they just don't know what to do with him yet. And they're not giving him line mates who I think are going to be able to help him out the best, and help set him up for success. And, you know, it's one thing for Todd McClellan to not really know what to do with Gabe Vilardi, who I think we all know is very talented, but just hasn't been able to stick. But it's another thing for Todd McClellan to not know what to do with your, like, you know, number two overall, whatever, draft pick. Like, you can't ruin this one, Todd. Come on.
He's trying.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's also interesting because I think one of the best ways for a rookie to be able to cut his teeth and really maybe score some, I'm not going to say gimme points, but at least start scoring some points and kind of making a better show, mm-hmm, is if you put him on the power play. He didn't get any power play time in the second period. And I think,
yeah,
he had like two power plays.
Yeah, like, no, yeah, that's insane. Especially considering how bad the Kings power play is. Like,
Carl Grundstrom was on the power play before Quentin Byfield.
Oh no, I hate that. I hate that. I mean, Carl Grundstrom, I guess, is sort of fulfilling the Dustin Brown role of go to the net and maybe it's going to bang in off of your butt, which, cool, like, a goal's a goal. But to not have Quentin Byfield on the power play is like, it's insulting, honestly. Like, just put him on there. He surely cannot do any worse than like some of the other guys you have out there. Because again, no one's scoring power play goals in general.
God, they almost gave up, I think, like three shorthanded goals. Hey, at least Trevor Moore scored a beauty of a shorthanded goal. That was fun. Before the Kings went and ruined it all. But, you know, that was fun.
It was a really fun, like, 12 seconds.
The interesting thing, and I noticed this since they came back from Boston, which was, I guess it's only been two games. Two games. But it's been an issue off and on several times this year. Their passes aren't connecting. So this was an issue a couple weeks ago when they first saw Boston in that horrible game, that which we shall not talk about. I was at that game and I was depressed the entire time. And I went with my friend who was a Bruins fan, so I was doubly depressed. Anyway, but the thing is, the passes were sloppy. It was either ahead or behind, so there was no tape-to-tape passes. Everyone looked kind of disheveled, disjointed, and I was like, okay, they look like they're playing a 3-4, whatever, like, it's a bad game. I'm sure they'll score one goal. No. But it was, again, the same issue that I noticed against the Sharks, and this is why I was kind of like, are they trying? Like, I know they're professionals. Of course they're going to try. But at the same time, I was like, have they talked to each other? Have they met? Do they know they're on the same team? Olimata is great at passing to the other team. Passing up the middle. Tape-to-tape passes right to the other, right to the opposition. No problem. Rim it around the boards to somebody in traffic. No problem at all. Get it out under duress. Yeah, that wasn't happening. And I don't mean to blame Olimata, because it was an issue with everybody. I mean, even Kopitar was like rimming the puck around the boards when there was like six guys there, like three in white, three in black. And I'm like, what are we doing? And this feels very systemic to me.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, it just seems like they'll... It just takes like one bad game and then things snowball, sort of, because when, like, we've seen this team be really, really good and play very impressive games and get wins that they deserve. And in those games, like, everything goes right. And we're not seeing this like terrible passing and bad puck control and whatever. And then it's like, well, you had one bad period and things just go disastrously from there. And I mean, I guess credit to this year's Kings versus like the past 3 years versions of the Kings, in that this year I have a lot more, well, injuries notwithstanding, because right now, again, it's literally like the Los Angeles, Ontario rain at this point. But overall this season, it's been kind of like most games when they've been down or they haven't looked good, I've still kind of had confidence that they'll at least come back and make it competitive. And for the most part, that's been true. Again, that terrible game against Boston, different. And that last game against San Jose. But like most of the games that they have struggled in, like, you still are kind of watching at the end being like, I don't know, maybe there's a chance. There haven't been many games that I've wanted to like turn off midway through because I'm like, this is useless. So that's an improvement on past seasons where it's like, once they were out of it, they were out of it, and they just never came back from being down. So I guess that's better, but you still would like to see them look like they've ever met each other before and not be like, oh, I thought you were going to be standing there. Like,
hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Beyond Natural Pet Food. Beyond Pet Food helps me care for what matters, my pets and my world. They help me nourish my pets with high-quality natural ingredients, like wild-caught salmon and organic free-range chicken. Beyond also has responsible sourcing practices and a long-term partnership with the Nature Conservancy. Beyond Pet Food, your pet, your world. Learn more at beyondpetfood.com.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's only Deneau and Moore. Like, those are the only two guys who ever know where the other ones are. And it's interesting because it's interesting who they struggle against. And maybe it's the whole playing down to your opponent thing. And we know the Sharks are really bad. I think they're like, I don't know, 28th or 26th or something. They're like way out there. But we saw them get up against Boston. Boston was that no quit game. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't watch the game because it was at a terrible time for me. It was 4 o'clock and I'm totally swamped with work. So I couldn't turn on the game. And so I'm sitting there later in the day because I recorded it because I'm still a weirdo who has cable. And I'm watching the game and I'm sitting there and my dog's sitting at my feet and I'm sitting there rubbing his head. And I'm like, I need to stop petting him because I'm going to rub a hole in his head because this game is so intense. Yeah, but it was a good game because I felt like as much pressure, as much pushback as Boston gave, the Kings gave an equal amount of pressure and pushback. They were outmatched, but it was the no quit grit thing that we've come to expect from them this season. And I hate saying that, the no quit grit, because it's nonsense, but we really did see them put their heart and soul into that game in order to force overtime.
Yeah. And like, that's been the biggest, you know, I feel like whenever I talk with people about, you know, the Kings and what things look like for them this season, and, you know, it does look like chances are they will make the playoffs. Like, knock on wood, all of these injuries, anything could change, but like, chances, they're in a good position right now. And even if they lose some ground because of this tough spot with injuries, like, they're still looking okay. But I still don't, like, I don't particularly peg them to maybe get out of the first round. They might win a game or two, but I think that it's that lack of consistency. It's the, we see, you know, that game against Boston, like you said, that was just, you know, yeah, the no quit, the fact that they stood up to one of the better teams in the league and came away with the win that maybe they didn't even deserve, but they won it anyway. But then to turn around and have these like totally miserable games against like the Sharks and stuff, you know, doesn't give me a whole bunch of confidence for, you know, navigating a 7-game series. But, and you know, that's why I'm like, okay, no, they shouldn't go out and like, well, now they might have to at the deadline go out and actually do stuff because again, everyone on the team is dead. But I'm like, okay, like I don't want Rob Blake to go and do anything insane. Like, this team isn't just one guy away. This isn't the like Marin Gaborik trade that's going to put you over the top. You know, I think if they're going to make trades, it should be like guys with term left or like, you know, actual hockey deals to make the team better in general, because no, they're not going to win the Stanley Cup this year. And if they do, like, everyone can replay this and like make fun of me for being wrong, but guess what? So will everyone else. Everyone else will have been wrong too. So it's not just me.
Yes, I will. I don't know. I don't know. I will do something crazy, but like not literally eat my hat, but I will eat my words.
Right.
If they manage to somehow win the Stanley Cup. But I was thinking about it the other day and I was thinking, what is this team missing? Well, if you want to compare it to the 2014 team in terms, the 2012 and 14 teams in terms of at least structure, what are they missing? So in my opinion, what they're missing, most importantly, they're three guys away from at least being competitive. I feel like they're still missing their Willie Mitchell, possibly also their Matt Green. And here's the thing about the Willie Mitchell and the Matt Green types, is what you're missing from Willie Mitchell is that steady veteran presence. And I know veteran presence is a little bit overhyped and a little bit like over-relied on, especially, it's become a cliche in and of itself, but the thing about Willie Mitchell, and this is what James kind of mentioned to me, and I'm like, oh, you're right, is, and he had an ability to calm the game down. So he was really good at making reads, he was really good at knowing where to be, but more importantly, like, he had the right amount of experience and having been around for enough time that he can go, hey, we're down one goal. All we need is one, you know, or it's the 3-1 lead, you know, hey, we're down two. If you get one, who knows what can happen? We right. can certainly get another one after that. So they're missing that Willie Mitchell type, that veteran leader mm-hmm. who maybe he's won a ring, maybe he hasn't. I don't think the pedigree is necessarily mm-hmm. important so much as the quote unquote leadership factor. And again, overhyped, I know, but it does serve a certain purpose. The other thing I think they're missing is they're missing kind of the Justin Williams, but also the Jeff Carter types. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Justin Williams, the heart and soul guy, they kind of have it. They kind of don't. This is a youngish team. They haven't quite been through the grinder as much as the 2012 team was. Like that 2012 team, they got knocked around quite a bit in 2010 and 2011. So that really made a difference. And that roster had actually been, the core of that roster had been together quite a while. The core of this roster has been together. I don't even know who the core of this roster is at this point.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're still kind of searching for that identity. But then, of course, you have the Jeff Carter, the Marion Gaborik, the Mike Richards, the game breakers. These are the guys who are going to come up big in big games, the guys who are going to score that timely needed goal. And I think I said it to Ryan the other day, I said, you know, I feel like Philip Deneau is their Jarrett Stoll. He's that piece that Dean Lombardi went out and got a few years ago, like a few years before they managed to win their first cup. And so he's much better. He's in terms of like raw skill than Stoll was, but in terms of like what he provides as far as like, you know, win that critical face-off when you need to win that face-off. Face-offs are never important until they are.
Right.
Which is the most ridiculous thing. He's that guy, but he also provides that veteran leadership. He's a guy who can be kind of that calming influence. I still think they need the Jeff Carter type, though. They really need finishers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, that's been the problem with the Kings for years, is that they like, they don't have one. And, you know, I think that, you know, we know Arvidsson is a guy who scores goals, but we also know that he's very streaky, and like he hit has been who he has been this season. And so I wouldn't necessarily call him a finisher. He's definitely helping in terms of goals, but you know, yeah, we don't have that guy who, you know, when he has the puck on his stick that you're going to be like, oh, this is dangerous. It's not like, you know, oh, that shot sure did go 10 feet wide of the net, didn't it? But I think the Justin Williams type character is kind of what I thought of immediately too, whenever, you know, you kind of start thinking about who this team is missing. And, you know, it's like you need, you know, you would think that you would have enough sort of character leadership in the room with guys like Kopitar and Brown and Doughty who have been the whole way. But I feel like you just need that one other guy to kind of help, you know, keep everyone on an even keel, and maybe that outside voice, you know, someone who's been outside of the team gives a little bit of a different perspective. But yeah, I feel like they're close, and it's going to be interesting to see the moves that Rob Blake makes to get them closer.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah, at this point you are going to have to start saying goodbye to some of the prospects that we all love in order to get those guys. I know it hurts. It hurts a lot. We should just be able to have whatever we want and not have to pay for it. That's how it should work.
All right. So speaking of moves, the Kings have 22 games left in this year, most of them against the Pacific. And thank God the Great Pacific Garbage Patch has manifested itself in the way that it has this year, because holy crap, the Pacific is bad. And so I think they have an outset or a good chance of at least finishing second, worst case scenario, third. I will kick myself if they finish in a wild card spot, but I still think that they have a really good chance, even with this spate of injuries, especially given that Arvidsson is skating. So looking down the deadline and knowing that you have 22 games left, likely to finish two or three, but still keeping an eye on the future, what do you do? Because in my opinion, they probably should look at shoring up their defense in the off season when it's much less, it's going to cost them probably less.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, you know, it's going to take the team a lot of looking at, you know, obviously they have more information about any of these injuries than we will. And I think we'll probably be able to glean a little bit about what's going on with those injuries based off the moves that they make. I could see them, you know, if they're looking at their injury picture and saying, yeah, you know what, we might squeak into the playoffs now. We're just going to have fun, see what happens. Like, I could see them looking for, like, depth defensemen so that so much pressure isn't on the kids, especially if, you know, any of these injuries to Doughty, Anderson, and Roy are going to be even, like, medium term. I would think you'd want to bring in someone with some experience just so they're not having to lean solely on Olimata as your experienced defenseman.
And Christian Willen.
Oh, that's right. He exists. so, you know, I could see that kind of move. And that's less of a playoff move and more just of a, like, keeping our team afloat kind of move. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think the big moves should be in the off season. You know, you're not going to overpay quite so much, particularly if it is like Rob Blake. Every sentence I get is that he's going for the hockey trade and not the rental trade. So you really want to overpay right now for someone who is probably still going to maybe be on the market once the playoffs or like once the off season hits. I think you'll have more flexibility kind of towards draft day, to make those moves. But yeah, I think right now is more of a short-term move to keep the team from like totally imploding under having to play the entirety of the Ontario Reigns defense. Because I mean, it also, everything trickles down. Like the Reign right now are one of the top teams in the AHL. And if they get decimated because everyone has to go up to the Kings, like you've now just tanked the Reign season too, which I think that, you know, the team, we all know that everyone looks at the team as, you know, developmental, no one really cares. But at the end of the day, I'd love to get those guys some playoff experience in the AHL and hopefully they go on a nice long run. So maybe you don't take all of their defensemen because you want the Reign to be in a good position coming into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think the NHL teams never care about the AHL. They have no problems calling up the Black Aces, mm-hmm. Even before like their playoff run is done, or recalling guys at a crucial time for the AHL when they're like on a hot run. But I do feel like having that, even at a lower level, it's a championship mentality. That's one of the reasons why Dean Lombardi always loved Mike Richards, why he was obsessed with Mike Richards. It's because this guy has won at every level. Don't you want someone like that on your team?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think you have a really good point when you say, like, yeah, maybe you don't quite want to completely recall the entire Ontario Reign.
Yeah. That would be bad because then you just have a bunch of like ECHL and PTO guys and it's not going to go well.
Well, also, I mean, it's a developmental league for a reason, right? So what good is it to rush your guys who are not clear, who are clearly not NHL ready.
Right.
And you only were hoping to recall them for a game or two to kind of, okay, now you've experienced what life in the NHL is like. Now you have something that you want to reach for, you know? It's not, oh God, here's all five of our rookies. They're the only guys with any talent on our on our farm team.
Right. Like,
Martin Burton.
Right. Yeah. You can't just like leave, you know, poor like Brett Sutter down there by his lonesome with a bunch of other random dudes. Like you can't, like, I think the team front office seems to see the value in, you know, the Reign have a good thing going. So let's, you know, obviously we need to fill holes on the Kings roster and give guys chances and whatever. But, you know, as they're looking down the line towards April, May, I think they need to and should be aware that you don't want to completely destroy the Reign especially if, you know, honestly, looking between the Reign and the Kings, the Reign certainly have the better chance of going on a really long playoff run.
Honestly, if the Kings last more than 5 games in the playoffs, I will be shocked. Like, God knows I love this team, and I'm trying to be positive about them, but, like, I think they can win 1 or 2 games in the playoffs. I cannot see them winning 4 games. And I'm not trying to be negative, I just... where they're at and what I've seen, the lack of consistency is a little bit, I think, a little bit too much. And I said this in 2014. I didn't have a podcast in 2014, obviously. All I did was write it down. I was like, they're not going to go anywhere in 2014. I was almost right.
Right. But... almost. Sort of.
Well, I meant in the first round.
Yeah. No. It's just nice to actually be able to look at this team and say, wow, right now they're in a playoff position, and to look at the Reign and go, wow, they're actually really good this year. Like, we haven't had that in a while.
Yeah. I forgot to mention this earlier, but you know who I was actually really impressed by? I was impressed by Jordan Spence in mm-hmm. his debut. Yeah. I didn't notice him at all. Even when I looked for him, I didn't see him.
He's very small.
But he acquitted himself very well in his first game. And I was like, normally rookies stand out for the worst reasons. And he was like, I mean, every time I saw him with the puck, he was making really smart decisions. And I was like, I'm impressed.
Yeah, and I think that, like, the few times he... did make mistakes. Like, I know there were a couple of plays where he was a little too aggressive on, or tried to get a little too cute. And, like, there are plays that would have totally worked in the AHL, and the NHL just did not work. It didn't help that the Kings had a bad game too. But, like, the fact is, though, that Todd McClellan kept putting him back out there. Which I every coach, oh my God, not just McClellan, sometimes is like, oh, young child, you did a bad. Okay, you're sitting for the rest of the period. And in this case, he just kept putting him out there, which was great.
Well, it's a little bit different when you have a defenseman and you're missing, like, your force, and you're relying on poor Matt Roy to play all 60 minutes and at the same time drag Olli Maatta up and down the ice.
And then gets hurt. Yeah. It's rough.
Yeah. Is there anybody that comes to mind that you think the Kings, going back to the trade deadline, is there anybody that comes to mind that you think the Kings should target, UFA or otherwise?
I've tried to ignore the trade market so much, man. The rampant speculation. All of my, like, trade options are just because I would find them funny, not necessarily because, like, it's the right move for the Kings. But, you know, I know everyone always looks at the Coyotes as possible trade partners. And, like, I wouldn't complain if the Kings acquired, like, I feel like the biggest names in Arizona who are trade bait are also guys who basically always score against the Kings. like, Lawson Crouse always scores against the Kings. Jake Chychrun always scores against the Kings. A couple of the other guys, like, just all, every game, you're like, oh, this kid again? So I wouldn't mind if the Kings acquired any of them, because it would mean they couldn't score against us again. I don't really know what the market for, like, depth defensemen looks like that isn't going to be an overpay. I don't think it's so dire that they need to go out and sell the farm for a guy who, like, actually isn't very good, which I feel like is a lot of what's out there right now. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I'm trying to trust them to make smart choices.
I told Ryan the other day, I was like, I think it'd be really great if we could see Hurdle in black and silver. It's never going to happen, but I would love to see Hurdle on the Kings, if only so he'll stop scoring against
us. Yes, yes. Or, I mean, at that rate, friggin' Timo Meier, who I feel like scored like 14 times against us this year, and there's still more games to go, like, that'd be rad.
Maybe Brett Burns and his epic beard.
But he's bad, though. Like,
yeah, but so are the Kings.
Can we get him for cheap? I'll take him for cheap if, like, you know, they're just going to give him to us.
I feel like Brent Burns somehow always makes an impact against the Kings. He can be having, like, the worst possible stretch of games. And then against the Kings, it's, like, the same guys. It's Logan Couture, Tomas Hertl, and Brent Burns. Like, freaking always. I'm like, where? You guys are, like, sucking.
Yeah, like, Erik Karlsson, who just came back from being, like, dead for 3 months or whatever, had, like, a fantastic game against the Kings. Of course he did.
Yeah, but Erik Karlsson's also bad now, so.
Yeah, except for against the Kings.
Yes. Maybe we should just, like, acquire the whole Sharks team and just kind of filter out who we want. Although I was looking at their roster the other day, and I'm like, this is the who's who of who the hell is this?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Falsers was on their AHL team for so long, I didn't know that he made their NHL team. I was like, surprise. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Or watching their AHL team the other day, I was like, I've never heard of, like, any of you.
It's Mark Bonk and Flick all over again.
Oh, man. Sharks.
Oh, all right. Well, here's hoping that they don't get crushed against Florida tonight, Sarah.
Fingers crossed. I'm going to hate it.
Any closing thoughts on the Kings?
Buckle up, because the next couple weeks are going to blow. I don't know.
Well, they have, their March schedule is absolutely brutal. They have 4 sets of 4 games in 6 nights.
No, I hate this. Good luck, Cal Peterson and Jonathan Quick. Godspeed.
We just have to hope that their groins hold up for the next 6 weeks.
Yes. Lots of duct tape and bubble wrap and, I don't know, whatever they do.
just wrap them in bubble wrap and just be very gentle with them off the ice.
Yes.
You can't move. We have to save your we have to save you for
right. Like, lots of relaxation.
Like, and yeah, that always puts me to sleep.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me, Sarah, and good luck to the Kings. And the rain.
We'll see. We'll see.
All right. Thanks again. Bye.
Bye.